Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. My name is Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. If you've missed any of my shows, you can go back and listen to the archives. Last week, I had the pleasure of interviewing Mark Feinberg, who is probably best known for his film Play the Game, which starred Andy Griffith, Forrest Roberts, and many other people as well that you probably recognize. Well, today I'm interviewing director Joel Sottolongo, who's best known for his indie film Work of Art, and I think I have him on the line. Let's see here. Okay. Joel, are you there?
Yeah, I'm on there.
Okay, great.
Hello?
Hey, you can hear me okay?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, great. Well, I was just talking about how you're probably best known for your film Work of Art, and before I get into some of your recent projects, I kind of want to talk about that film. And that was done back in 2008, but it was really unique because it was sort of two stories in one, and I want to start out talking about that. Maybe you can tell us how that worked out.
Okay. Well, basically, the two different stories, basically, is you have one story that's about a janitor that works in an art gallery who needs to pay off his debts on his mortgage, so he just... They decide to make a bunch of art, and I'm using air quotes when I say art, to sell off at the gallery to pay off their mortgage. I had made that up, that story up, a long time ago. I would say even as far as the when I was in the Navy, so we're talking like early 90s here.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always a short story that I held on to for a while. And the other story about Deke and Gordo, the two hitmen, and their little adventure in the Everglades and everything. We had actually filmed two earlier versions of that, once in the mid to late 90s and again in the early 2000s. But due to technical issues or actors or whatever, it didn't quite pan out. So then back in 06, when I finally formed Studio 214, and we had been trying to make another movie called The Low Road for like 2 years, we got like 15 minutes of it done the first time. We got about halfway through the second time before everything fell apart. So then we finally decided, all right, we need a story that's easier technically and to do. So, you know, I figured out that basically we'll take these two short stories I had and smash them together. Chris originally, when he wrote Work of Art, had the thing that ties everything together was always the fact that Gordo saw the one of the paintings and got inspired to quit. The only thing that was really different originally in Work of Art from the first draft to the later drafts was it was about him actually having cancer as opposed to having a girlfriend that's pregnant.
Okay. So that's
and,
a little bit. For those that don't know, he's a hitman. I want to put that in there because a lot of people maybe haven't seen it and they don't know
right.
Who Deke and Gordo are.
Right. So, yeah. So, with the painting and influencing one of the hitmen to quit his job is basically how we put the two stories together.
Mm-hmm.
We went through about three drafts of it before we finally had a shooting script.
Okay.
Also, in earlier drafts, there's a when we first see the hitmen in a bar, and there's a conversation about Pulp Fiction. Originally, the movie started with that scene, and then after the second draft, I decided to switch that around and put that into the second act.
Mm-hmm. And the film kind of has a Quentin Tarantino aspect to it, I think. It's got a little bit of violence, but it's got a lot of comedy, and the way that they talk about certain things really reminds me of Tarantino. Was that intentional?
Yeah, we were really going, in some sense, Work of Art is sort of about other independent films, where you could almost say half of it is a Kevin Smith movie and the other half is a Tarantino movie.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
Kind of smashed them together.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So I would
and
say, yeah,
some,
you know,
yeah,
definitely go.
Okay. And you had some really great casting, especially for Deacon Gordo. How did you cast this film?
We used almost everybody that showed up to our casting.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't as well connected now as, you know, back then. And we put it out on the Blue Book and a few other
uh-huh.
websites and hit up a few people we knew. And there's like 25 some odd speaking parts and work of art. I think we had like 30 some odd people showed up. So we just about used everybody that showed up.
You got lucky.
And with
Deacon
Gordo,
Deacon Gordo.
We were actually pretty lucky. Kevin mm-hmm. came in and sort of hit it out of the park instantly. And mm-hmm. we had another Gordo originally, but he had to bow out due to scheduling conflicts. And another actor knew Craig, who ended up playing Gordo, and
mm-hmm.
we got him about a week later after the casting.
Yeah. And you got some interesting locations, too, all over the place, and including an art gallery. How did you secure your locations and find them?
The art gallery was all Jimmy Starr, actually.
Yeah.
We met him the first time during the casting, and he knew Cece, who was managing the place at the time, and they were just really cooperative. The only issue was we had 2 days we could film there and 2 days only, and mainly because
mm-hmm.
they would have changed all the art around inside the gallery. So even if we had come back to film, none of the same works would be
right.
in there. So we had a strict 2-day window to film in, and it actually affected casting because our original art couldn't work those 2 days. He was going to be out of town. So that actually ended up recasting Renee in that lead
mm-hmm.
Because of that.
Yeah. And then you also shot
the other locations were pretty much other people's houses, and the bar we filmed in was my friend's bar that he's been working at for years, so we got pretty lucky
mm-hmm.
with that too.
And you had a scene, the scene where they do the body drop. Tell me about that. How did you find that spot?
That spot actually is a place that I used to go shooting guns when I was much younger, back when I was a teenager. And I've always known of the place. So we figured that was a nice far enough spot where we could do all the messy stuff and pretty much get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, it has this very end of the road, so to speak, look to it. I mean, the
uh-huh.
road literally ends, and it's nothing but Everglades left. So it has that
yeah.
sense that, you know, they've gone far out of town to get rid of the body.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of guns, you know, back and forth. There's a scene where they're in the neighborhood with guns. Did you have problems with the neighbors? Did anybody say anything with that?
No, because the one tricky one was outside the art gallery, which is a quick little like thing you see
mm-hmm.
at the end of the movie where you're seeing what different ideas that people are coming up with, and
mm-hmm.
so you see Art and Gordo get gunned down in the street and on a drive-by, and
uh-huh.
basically we had to tell the Hollywood police, and they told us, look, you know. Just make it quick, and if anybody calls about the gunshots, don't be there when we get there, which is essentially
yeah.
what happened. We filmed it and then all rushed in the van and took off, and I think it came out okay.
Wasn't there a scene where there actually were cops in the scene that you used, the footage?
Yeah, at the end of the first act, once you get introduced to Deacon Gordo, the hitmen, you see them driving down the street to go do their job. And I had rehearsed with them in the car about 3 times at least, you know, plotting how far down US 1 they would go, you know, how they would loop it around so that, you know, they could do the scene a few times without me in the car. Because
mm-hmm.
the way we had the camera set up, you would see me in the back seat. So that, you know, unless I rode in the trunk, there was no riding in the car. And, you know, so we put the camera on, you know, we send them on our way, and in the first take, they get pulled over. And while I was editing the movie, after I did my first cut, I talked to the sound guy, and we looked at the footage, and you can't even see which police department it is that they get pulled over by. So then we decided to ADR some dialogue to make it fit so that we could actually put it in the movie. You know, having cop cars with their lights going off and everything is pretty decent production value, so it's I thought it was a good idea to keep it. A lot of people think we're very artistic with fading to black when he gets out of the car and shoots the cops, but truth is be told, when we had to fade to black because there was no show showing them shoot the cops, so... It wasn't an aesthetic choice. It was a necessary function.
Mm-hmm. What do you think was the most challenging part of doing the film?
All the logistics, really. Getting everybody to show up, making sure everybody knows their lines, securing locations, all the paperwork. Basically, a lot of the producer work, which is what sort of killed us the first few times we tried to make the Low Road feature. We just didn't have our stuff together in that sense. Mm-hmm. So when Terry came on board, finally with Work of Art, finally that whole end of the business got taken care of for us properly for a change.
Yeah, you had a really good team behind you. Tell me about that. Tell me about your team.
Well, there's me, who I direct, shoot, and edit. There's Chris, who's the writer, and him and I, story-wise, collaborate pretty heavily. He and I will figure out the story, we'll come up with an outline with the plot and characters and everything, and then he'll go off and write a first draft, and then I will nitpick and write a billion notes on a draft, and then give it back to him, and then we'll go back and forth. You know, however many times to get a draft. Mm-hmm. And him and I get along really well. A lot of writers are tough to edit because they sort of take things personally. But Chris has an adamantium ego, so I can't really hurt his feelings in that sense. So it's very good because it makes my job easier because I don't have to worry about holding back or anything. You know, anything I think I just put down. And 95% of the time we agree. It's very rare when we disagree. And actually, normally when we disagree, he has veto power as the writer, so it tends to go his way those very few times that we don't agree. Terrence was a very old friend of mine from high school. Mm-hmm. And we basically brought him aboard specifically for Work of Art. He was at he was in between jobs at the time, and so it was more like, well, if you're not doing anything else, you can come help us with this. And it turned out to be a great decision because it couldn't have been made without him. Yeah. Same goes for Leo. I had gone through three or four sound guys who either, you know, I couldn't pay enough or flaked out on me in one way or the other. And in fact, I was outside the house of the last sound guy I had with, you know, the hard drive and all the money he gave back to me that had already paid him to work on it. And then finally called Leo with, and he always says I had a very desperate tone to my voice at the time. And I was like, you know, I'm down to you. He was able to work out for almost the same reason at the time. He was a property appraiser, and if you can imagine, in 2007 when I hit him up, there wasn't much property appraising going on, so he had plenty of time to work on the movie.
Yeah.
And he was another godsend. He literally came in working on a software program he had never so much as seen before and literally put together all the sound for the movie because everything in Work of Art was recorded afterwards. All the wild sounds are recorded afterwards. All the dialogue is ADR'd. And I actually did all the ADR recording before I brought Leo on board, which might have been a mistake because I made a mistake with a mic attenuation level, which made the voices sound a little tinny, but I think Leo did a hell of a job putting the sound together for a whole movie.
Yeah,
ADRing a whole movie by yourself is not an easy task. It took him about 3 months to do it in all.
Yeah. And that was because the other sound guy flaked out and had problems, or because you didn't have the equipment at the time? What exactly happened?
No, it was basically because, you know, the first sound guy, I couldn't pay enough. The second sound guy flaked out on me. The third sound guy, I think, found a better paying job and kicked me to the curb. So, and I, because Leo had, you know, a steady job and stuff at the time, I didn't think of him in the beginning, even though I had used him on my shorts before. But, you know, thank God he was available at the time and was able to sit down at the computer and spend 3 months, you know, essentially putting the sound together for the movie. I mean, a lot of times when you sound on a movie, it's a lot of guys working on it. And, you know, the entire post-production by two people, myself and Leo. And then last but certainly not, there's Mike Grandchamp, who has the, we put him down as crew on Work of Art just because he did everything on the set that I didn't do. He helped me with the Steadicam, helped me with the special effects, including the squibs for the gunshots. You know, was sort of an assistant cameraman as well, make sure all my equipment was there and ready. It was just a – Grandchamp was a big help. He also did all the paintings that are arts paintings. And much to his chagrin, because I made them – Grandchamp's quite a talented artist. But I made him, you know, forced him to make bad paintings on purpose.
Yeah.
So it was difficult for him.
Where did you get the squibs?
We actually made them. My job in the Navy was working with weapons and explosives, so I might have more confidence than others on working with that kind of stuff. And basically we take black powder and we take... you know, like a Tylenol capsule, and we take the aspirin or whatever it is out of it, and we put black powder in it. And then we take what they call solar igniters for model rockets, which are these two little wires that come to a point, and at that point there's this little bit of resin on it that will catch fire from the... So we attach that to the pill that has the gunpowder in it, and then we put resin over it to make it hard, and you have a squib. Now, our manufacturing process is not perfect, but we've gotten better and better at it, you know, as time has gone by.
And you had some other problems with some equipment too, didn't you, with lighting and different things also?
Well, lighting, I think I used one light twice in the entire film.
Yeah.
That was in the after party, in the second act. And because it was outside in a backyard, so we put one light out. And I'm trying to remember what the other time, but the rest of the time it was really just natural light. Issues with equipment for us was the trickiest part was the Steadicam. Because the Steadicam on, we had to retighten all the screws because I had a bad habit of literally falling apart in my hands as I'm moving around. So that was probably the trickiest piece of equipment was the Steadicam.
Did you have really long shoot days?
Actually, I'm notoriously fast shooter, and we had 15 shoot days, and all but three of them were six-hour days.
That's great.
We only had 3 days that went over 6 hours. Two of those days that went over 6 hours were still under 12, and we only had one day that went over 12 hours. So we did pretty
good. Now, this also went to some festivals. How did you get into the festivals?
It's the sort of spray and pray tactic. We applied to pretty much every festival we figured we could conceivably either get to or was big enough to figure out how to get to. And I had, earlier on when I was still in college, used to always go to the local film festivals, especially the Fort Lauderdale Film Festival. And I had actually had set in mind that that would probably be our best chance for our premiere, which is ended up being what happened. So.
And you went to the Treasure Coast Festival too, right?
Oh yeah, the Treasure Coast, which was a great surprise for us because we actually applied to them kind of late, and it turned out to be one. It's a really great festival out there, and anybody who lives in the area, especially up by West Palm and stuff, I highly recommend that you go to that festival. It's a great blast, and the people who run that festival are all great people. I attend that festival even when I don't have a film.
Yeah. And it just shows you with your film that despite all the many issues that you had, you still put out a product that people wanted to go see, and you still were able to get it into festivals. So it's just about perseverance, I guess.
Yeah, tenacity, right? Perseverance, grit, I guess is what you need lots of. I read more than once that 90% of the first feature films that attempt to get made actually don't get made. So, you know, it's always a long shot making a feature film, especially at the, you know, micro budget or no budget level. And, I mean, technically, that was our third shot at our first feature film, so I guess the odds caught up with us. You know, I rolled the dice three times and finally got the score I needed. And I think it's just that I had a good crew. I mean, literally five of us put the movie together, including the writer or the producer. So if you want to talk what second crew, only three of us put the movie together, and if you know, you're talking about post-production, only two of us put the movie together, so that's a lot less people work than is normally working on a movie. Even on small productions, you normally have more people working on the film, so it's just you have to have the right people who are...
Now, is it available to see anywhere now? Can anybody see it still?
Yeah, we were on Big Star TV for about a year, and we did pretty good there. And then about 6-7 months ago, once I had realized that YouTube had changed its rules about links and whatnot, I just decided to put the whole thing up on our Studio 214 page. So it's been there.
Okay, so
I had it set on, not private, but unlisted for a while. And then I finally just put it public maybe a few weeks ago.
Okay,
so
great.
Hopefully we'll start getting more views now.
They can just go to YouTube and then type in Studio 214 and it'll come up. They'll find Work of Art.
Yes, if you type in Work of Art Studio 214, it'll come up. And you'll know it's the right file because it's an hour and a half.
Okay. And now you're working
on
a documentary.
There's also on that page, also on our Studio 214 page, is the interview that you did with us, which maybe a few months. No, it was just like a month after we did our private screening, I think.
Yeah.
May of 08. Yeah, that sounds right. It was about because we did our private screening in April, which is actually the first time we met you. And then I think we did that interview about a month later.
Yeah. Of course, I got to help out with publicity on the film, too, and interview you guys. So it was great.
Yeah, you got us in print, so that was a big help.
Yeah. Okay, so they can check it out on YouTube. But I want to talk about you're also working on a documentary, which is totally different, about a band, and the documentary is called That Was Pity Corn. Tell me how the heck you got involved in that.
Okay, so that was Pity Corn. It was obviously a play on words with This Is Spinal Tap.
Right.
Leo, who is my sound guy in Studio 214, is the drummer of that band. And I was very close to that band. Yeah. I was very close with that band for years and years. They were, I would say, from the mid-90s to about 2000, you know, the second half of the 90s was their heyday. And I filmed them all the time. Every time they went to a new venue, I would film them again. They went on tour for a couple of weeks in Florida and Georgia, and I went with them and filmed all the hijinks and the gigs. And with a Hi8 camera, so you can imagine how long ago that was.
Wow.
Yeah, and those Hi8 tapes basically just sat there collecting dust for a while. At one of the guys in the band, the Pittycorn, you have Mike Caccaro, who is their lead singer. You've got Tony Tomas, who is their lead guitar. You've got Mike Twitchy Lard, who is the bassist. You got Leo Codias, who is the drummer, who also works on sound for 214. And you have Scott Wheeler, who is the rhythm guitar. And, you know, I was friends with all of them, pretty close. We had that footage for a while. And Twitchy, Michael Ard, I gave all the tapes to him. He's an editor. And I figured maybe, one day he would want to do something with it. Fast forward 15 years. And I got a little bored trying to get the low road made, and I had made a couple of shorts, but I was sort of getting cabin fever, wanting to work on something. So I got the footage back from Michael Ard, and I actually just digitized a bunch of it.
How do you do that?
About 9 hours and 45 minutes so far.
How do you do that? Take those old VHS tapes and digitize them. How does that work?
Well, on eBay, there's a guy out of North Carolina that will rent you for $120 a very good operating Hi8 VCR. And then Blackmagic Design, which might be more famous now for people for the Blackmagic Design cinema camera that they just came out with. But they also come out with breakout boxes for video and whatnot. And they have a video converter, so I bought the video converter and rented the VCR and digitized all the tapes that way.
Great.
And like I said, we got almost 10 hours of footage so far. One of my tapes broke that I was trying to record, and I had to carefully take it out of the VCR, but there's about another hour and a half of footage on that tape. So hopefully I'll be able to recover that last bit of footage. But we got a lot of stuff. I certainly have enough to put it together, a feature-length documentary. Maybe not an hour and a half, but about an hour or so of solid stuff.
And in the meantime, you're also working on another project called Rolling 20s, which is about, it sounds like it's about a role-playing game, right?
Yeah, that's basically about a group of friends gathering at somebody, at a guy's house to play Dungeons and Dragons. Of course, it's not Dungeons and Dragons, it's Legends and Lore, but, you know, same thing. And,
do you play those kind of games?
Oh, yeah. So both the writer, Chris, the writer, and myself, and Grand Champ as well, and Terry, most of us actually. I think Leo was the only one that probably did not play Dungeons and Dragons when he was young, so he's cooler than the rest of us. But the rest of us certainly played a lot. And I think actually that has a big influence on our ability to sort of make up stories and stuff for Chris and myself. I think you build a pretty big narrative sense and a sense of character playing those games, the role-playing games.
Yeah.
And basically what happened was I had filmed a short last year around April, which was sort of a primer on the low road, the feature we were trying to make before, about these two side characters. It was my first time working with DSLR cameras. And essentially, when I got the footage back and started editing it, the footage looked so good to me that I felt confident that at the lower end we could make another feature and get it to look much better than Work of Art did. You know, genuinely high definition and all that. So I came up with some parameters in mind, and this time let Chris sort of come up with the idea on his own, and he was the one that came up with the idea of just having a bunch of friends going over to somebody's house to play Dungeons and Dragons. And he started banging out the script. I want to say he started writing in August, and by January we finished up the fourth draft, which is what we're on right now. And I would essentially say that's the shooting script.
Okay. So you don't know quite when you're shooting yet because you just finished the film, right? This is the script.
Well, we actually plan to film in August. We plan to have a heavy rehearsal schedule for the would be the five main actors that are going to be in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially because we're going to try to really bang it out on a six-day shoot. Since a majority of the film is in one location, you know, it'll essentially be me, a sound guy, and the actors. So it's essentially rehearse them as we can so that when we get that week to shoot, we can really just bang it out. And since we kind of did work of art in 9 days, and that was much more complicated logistically, I think I feel confident we can pull off the majority of the film that needs to be filmed at the one location in 6 days. So we plan to start rehearsing and film in mid-August.
Okay. Do you already have your cast?
I have some people cast, but I have not cast the whole thing yet. I've cast,
are you gonna have a cast?
Two of the characters so far. So two out of the five main characters have been cast, and everything else is everybody else I'm still looking for. I haven't put it out too publicly, but I will soon. I'm trying to lock down a few people that, you know, I've personally approached for the roles. So once they turn me down, I'll be more public and searching for more cast members.
How would people find out about it? If you do post it, where would you post it at?
Well, I'm pretty heavy on Facebook, so.
So why don't you give us your Facebook sites for that and also for Pity Corn?
Okay, so for Pity Corn, it's, let me look it up right now just to make sure I'm saying it correctly. For Facebook, it's facebook.com/thatwaspitycorn.
Mm-hmm.
For Studio 214, it is facebook.com/studio214llc.
Mm-hmm.
And for Work of Art, it's facebook.com/workofartthemovie.
Uh-huh.
And
Rolling 20s is
and
the Rolling 20s.
My personal Facebook page is Joel Sotolongo 214.
Okay. So you have quite a bit of presence on Facebook for sure. And
yeah.
So
and of course, when I'm looking
go...
for my casting, I'll be hitting you up as well. So.
Yeah.
You seem pretty well connected with the people up in West Palm and around there.
I try.
Between you and Indie Film Club, I should be able to put it all together.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Joel. Well, we're kind of running out of time. Is there any last websites or anything that you want to give out?
I guess on Twitter, we're at Studio 214 LLC on Twitter. Let me check that real quick and make sure I'm correct about that. I think that's what it is. Yeah, Studio 214 LLC on Twitter. And
so people should just kind of keep an eye out for you, and I'll probably bring you back on once you get Pity Corn and Rolling 20s in the can.
The documentary I'll have in the can by the summer. And it'll probably take over a year to get the next feature done.
Okay.
Rolling 20s will probably
we'll figure that out. Okay. Well, thanks for coming on today.
And thanks for
having me. I'll talk to you soon.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Joel.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Well, that was Joel Sotolongo, and we spent quite a bit of time talking about Work of Art. I really enjoy watching that movie. I don't know how many times I've seen it. I've seen it a million times. I know I'm exaggerating, but I've seen it a lot. And there's just a lot of funny bits in that film. And it's, you know, despite all the technical issues, it was just a really unique idea, and I really enjoyed it. So I would definitely check that out on YouTube. Just realize that it is an indie project, and like you said, the whole thing was ADR'd, natural light. You know, take all those things into account. At a casting, you just have to take whoever shows up. You know, so all those things taken into account, I think it was a very interesting and funny film to watch, and I really enjoyed it. And then he also mentioned his other projects as well that are coming up, and I'm sure I will bring him back at some point and we can talk more about that. Okay, guys, well, thank you for tuning in again this week, and I will be back next week with a very interesting guest, so you want to make sure you tune in same time, Sunday at 1 o'clock. And as always, please check out my Facebook page if I'm on social media as well. Just go to www.facebook.com/indiestreak, just like this show, IndieStreak. And please like the page because I do put up castings on there. Once Joel contacts me, I will definitely put that casting up on that site about his new project, Rolling 20s. And I put events and different things that I don't put anywhere else. I'm kind of all over the place, but on that site, I try to keep it exclusive content if I can. Okay? Well, thanks so much, and I will talk to you guys next week. Again, if you are a filmmaker and you want to be on the show, you can email me, ravenprods@yahoo.com, ravenprods@yahoo.com. Okay, thanks.